A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Cam Edwards, your host, glad that you've joined us today. It's a little bit different program than what we normally do here on Bearing Arms Cam and Company. We're not talking about Second Amendment issues, but Second Amendment adjacent, I think. Food prep, things of that nature, because I just have a feeling the coronavirus is growing here in the United States. We know this. And I just have a feeling that we're going to look back, let's say, on March the 5th, 2 months from now. And there's a distinct possibility that the world in which we are operating in will be a significantly different place than what it is today. So to help us navigate all of that, I brought in my friend John Stokes, editor at The Prepared, who's been doing great work talking about what folks need to do to be prepared in case of disruption in their day-to-day life as a result of the coronavirus. We won't be covering your armed citizen story, your recidivist report. We'll get back to those on Monday. But today we're talking all about coronavirus, what we can expect over the next couple of months, and what you should do to be prepared over the next couple of months. Take a look and a listen. Hey, John, thanks so much for spending some time with us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I know that this isn't specifically Second Amendment related, but as I said, I think this is Second Amendment adjacent when we talk about, what we should be doing to prepare for the possibility of, some pretty significant disruptions in our day-to-day life with the coronavirus. I know this is something that you all are doing quite a bit of talking about at The Prepared right now.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we don't have a what caliber for coronavirus page. So I think it would be like 0.000022. I don't know.
Yeah. Right. Got to go small.
You got to go small. And also, you got to watch the MOA size of your red dot, too. I mean, you need like a anyway. For the coronavirus preparedness, I mean, really, it's going to come down to keeping your body clean, keeping your area clean, keeping yourself protected, and food, being ready to shelter in place. Because one of the things that I'm working on right now is trying to model hospital capacity in the U.S. We just don't have that many beds per 1,000. I mean, we have a very advanced healthcare system. We just do not have a very capacity-rich healthcare system. We're not equipped for surges. So, for instance, South Korea, where they have lines right now in the hospitals, they have like I think some 13 something beds, 12.6 beds per 1,000. In the U.S., it's like 2.8 beds per 1,000. So we have a multiple less hospital capacity to deal with this. And in South Korea, they're already overflowing in the hospitals. So, and they're 6 weeks into this. So this is a concern, because you see that the fatality rate, you see these numbers like, the fatality rate is 2% or it's 1% or something like this. That's if you can get in the hospital. It's very much, indexed to healthcare availability. So my overall prepping point here being that if you're going to get this disease, you want to get it after everybody else has gotten it. And the big lump of people have worked their way through the hospital system. Are you still there, Cam? You're freezing up a little bit on me. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
No problem. So after the big lump of people have worked their way through the hospital system, then, you can get it and you can know that you can get into a hospital, and then you've got those good odds. You've got those, half a percent fatality rate, and then mostly you're at risk if you're like 80. Like, so those numbers of, it's just the flu numbers, you can get those kind of odds if you can get healthcare. If we have everybody is sick, everybody needs oxygen at the same time, everybody needs a ventilator at the same time, then it's a different story. So you want to prepare to shelter in place. You want to prepare to keep yourself well so that if you're going to get this thing, you get it next year or after there's a vaccine or after there's a treatment for it, or at the very least when you can get in a hospital bed or an ICU bed if you need it.
you know, John, one of the things I've been curious about, I mean, typically the flu season lasts until, you know, mid-spring. And then as the weather warms up, the incidence of flu tend to die out. I know that this is obviously, again, a novel virus. We haven't seen this before, so we don't really know how this is going to act. But is there an assumption that that this is going to sort of naturally decline over the next couple of months? And then we'll see perhaps, you know, again, a resurgence of this as we get back into flu season in the fall and next winter?
That's one assumption. That's a hope. The problem is that the novel influences and the novel coronaviruses, they don't do this seasonal pattern. They're not affected by the heat the way that seasonal influenza is. This was true of swine flu in 2009. It was true of Spanish flu in 1918. So there's really no and virologists are saying this, there's really not a good reason to expect that the spring is going to tamp this down. It may happen. God, I hope so. You know, that would be awesome if we got a breather because of this hospital capacity dynamic I talked about. It'd be great if we could get a breather in the spring. But that's not something to count on because this is a new virus. And when it's a new virus that we've not seen before, it just doesn't seem to obey those weather dynamics.
How do you think we're doing as Americans right now in terms of responding to this threat? You know, are there a lot of us who are just sort of burying our heads in the sand and thinking, well, you know, it's the flu. It's not going to be that bad.
I think we're probably in pretty deep trouble. You know, this is not the kind of thing that you can sort of crowdsource or do a bottom-up thing. A pandemic is however you feel about big government centralization, whatever, a pandemic is one of those rare corner cases where you need some kind of central coordination. There have been a lot of studies that show that closing the schools helps, especially in a case like this, where for as near as we can tell, children get it and they're like asymptomatic or they're mildly symptomatic. And you just can't, you know, so these kids are going to go into school and they're going to get this stuff and then they're going to bring it home to mom and dad. And mom and dad are one of them going to get sick. The kids will be kind of fine, which, you know, as a parent of three elementary school kids, that's like the one bright spot here is that whatever happens to my wife and I, my kids will most certainly be okay. And be spared the worst of this. But you know, there's a lot of central steps that we should take. We should try and surge hospital capacity. We should be trying to isolate and quarantine. We should be, it's ridiculous that there's any public event happening in Seattle right now. Comic-Con is about to go on, 100,000 people. There's all kind of stuff happening there. They should just lock the city down. Microsoft has already told their people at the main campus in Redmond, work from home. All these tech companies are on top of it. And the tech companies are on top of it because they understand the dynamics of viral growth. They understand that if you have like a doubling time of 7 days or whatever it is, that you start with 100 and then in a few weeks out, you know, you've got millions of cases. So that's a dynamic that the tech people understand pretty well that I don't think is sinking in for the rest of the public. It's just, we're just not used to that kind of power law, dynamic, it's called. So I think our response, and our general lack of response and a lot of happy talk around trying to prop up the stock market, this is not good. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that I just eat a big plate of crow. I'll come on here and I'll shoot a crow and I'll cook it and I'll eat it. That would be great. But it doesn't look like we're taking this seriously. And again, these headline numbers of, you know, 0.5% fatality, 1% fatality, that's if you can get in the hospital. And a lot of people, an early study from Wuhan has 20% requiring hospitalization. In Italy, 10% right now need ICU. 10% of the cases in Italy need ICU. We don't have beds. We've got maybe 90,000 ICU beds. So we've actually got about 46,000, but maybe 90 if we really stretch and adapt, according to Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. So we don't have ICU beds to handle You know, even 10% of the public getting this, a bad flu season right now, the flu season that we're coming off the end of, about 9% of the public, 9 to 10% of the public got the flu. And if that holds for coronavirus, and frankly, the bottom end estimates from, some of the epidemiologists are that 20% of us will get this, between 20 and 60% of us will get this year. But even if we're at a 10% infection rate in the U.S., if you back into the numbers, and I'm going to do that shortly in an article that I'm publishing, you can see that 100,000 ICU beds is like, it's a drop in the bucket of what we need. Close to 1 million hospital beds is a drop in the bucket. Most of those are occupied right now, given that it's flu season, and a lot of metro hospitals are running at over 100% occupancy rate. In a regular normal time of year, hospital occupancy rates in this country are around 2/3. So we've got about 2/3 of the beds occupied. So we don't have capacity here. Again, all of the advanced healthcare that we have, we can go in and do all kinds of things with cancer and, you know, lasers and drugs and whatever. There's no treatment for this. It's new. We don't have a treatment yet. There's no amount of magic. You need a hospital bed. You need a ventilator. You need medical care for vomiting, diarrhea, difficulty breeding, stuff like this, high fever. You need kind of the basics. And if we can't provide that at scale, then the only other option for us is to flatten that epidemic curve that goes up, flatten that infection curve, and stretch this thing out so that we ration it. We ration that capacity and people get sick in small numbers in small locations. And so the hospital can kind of, the system can kind of digest that and work its way through it.
So how much, how long do you think folks should plan for sheltering in place in terms of, you know, getting the food that they need, thinking about the water that they might want to acquire? Even if you've got, you know, tap water, it's good to have emergency supplies. I'm on well water, and this past weekend we had an issue where all of a sudden we had no water whatsoever. Turned out it was an easy fix, but you know, for a moment there, I had sort of been assuming like, okay, well, cool, you know, I'm good to go because I've got well water. So even if something happens with the taps, that's not going to impact me. And then all of a sudden, I don't have any water supply. Thankfully, you know, we had some already stored, but I went out and I bought another case of bottled water just in case. How long should folks be preparing to shelter in place?
So this is a really tough question, and my answer to that is going to be as long as you can. Mm-hmm. So normally, standard preparedness is, you know, we would say 2 weeks, and on the website at theprepared.com, we're telling people start with 2 weeks, but try to get up to 90 days, which is a long time. That's a lot of food. You know, water, I think you don't need 2 weeks worth of water. You can do like 72 hours of water. And just because you can figure it out with the water situation, you can go somewhere and get water, especially if you've got filtration. So when you're thinking of storing potable water, you know, try to get 72 hours of water. You're looking at a gallon per person per day. So, you know, about 3 days, 3 gallons a person, something like that. So, so you can go small with the water. Food is tough. A lot of the normal food recommendations are based around the idea of food for preps. So you're buying kind of like food insurance. And so you tell people store 2 weeks because people have to make sense of what works with their budget, right? So when you're doing prepping, you have to think, what is sane for me? What is what can I afford? You know, I don't want to go into debt. I don't want to, you know, what is my credit card APR? If I've got a, you know, obscene 25% credit card APR, and then I go buy 2 weeks worth of groceries on it, that's not smart in an ordinary prepping situation. Right now, though, we're not in a prepping situation. I grew up on the Gulf Coast, and what we're, a better analogy for what we're facing right now is a hurricane in the Gulf. So what I grew, the way that I grew up in, I'm from South Louisiana, and we track hurricanes, and when there's a hurricane inbound, you've got kind of a rough range of what category it's going to be when it hits land a few days out. And then you've got kind of a region of the Gulf where it's probably going to make landfall and then you plan accordingly. Okay. So when you're in that mode and you're tracking this thing and it's inbound and it's about to hit where you live, you're not prepping anymore when you run out to the store and get water and get food. And when you start boarding up the windows, that's, you're out of the realm of ordinary prepping and you're into kind of emergency response. That's where I think we're at as a country, with this coronavirus epidemic. We're sort of past the realm of prepping and trying to help people prep. And we're in the realm of, okay, there's a hurricane in the Gulf. We don't know if it's going to be a category 5 when it lands, a category 1. We're not exactly sure where it's going to hit, how long it's going to go for, but it's out there. It's headed our way. We've got, you know, a week or two before it makes landfall. Get your stuff ready. It's definitely out there. It's coming. We're kind of out of the realm of prepping. So what I'm telling people now for food is, like, you're going to eat for a month. You know, you're going to spend that money on food for a month. Spend it up front. Even if you've got to go out and you've got to put it on your credit card at this point, put it on your credit card. Don't really put yourself in a bind. I mean, everybody's got to know where their own limit is, but we're in that kind of like emergency run out and fill up the tank and board the windows kind of situation.
Well, so, and Ads Are Prepared, you guys did a really good job of coming up with, you know, sort of a sample budget and things that won't break the bank in terms of, you know, buying that extra food and doing things of that nature. So I'd encourage folks to check out theprepared.com and the list that you all have come up with. You talk about being a week or two out from that hurricane. Is that where you think we are right now? Do you think we are a week or two away from seeing some real disruptions? I know, you know, in the Seattle area, we're already starting to see some of this, but nationwide, when do you think the hurricane comes ashore?
So this is the kind of thing where the numbers for disease progression have been pretty stable and have kind of governed this, a lot of the timetables. So you've got two things going on. You've got the RO, which is the doubling time, and then you've got the actual disease progression when people get symptomatic and when they need to go into the hospital. So a sample timeline is like a 15-day progression where you got about 5 days, you got maybe 2 or 3 days asymptomatic. All this is going to vary. It's going to vary by where you are, who you are, your level of fitness and health, all this stuff. So this, I'm speaking in big generalities. Maybe 4 or 5 days before you're really, if you've got to go to the hospital, that's when you're going to go. Okay. So then once you get there, you're going to spend maybe 10 days in the hospital. So you're thinking of a 2-week time from when this person is infected to when they are like really like right there in the hospital system, maybe getting ready to check out, maybe, you know, just coming off of a fever or something like this, assuming they're going to survive. So we can look at things in kind of 2-week increments as these different cohorts get infected and these different regions get infected. Right now, there's probably, a couple thousand cases in the U.S. and there's different ways to model that. One of the ways that's been modeled is, researchers will look at a sample of the virus like they did in Seattle, and they know how long it takes it to mutate. And so they can compare the virus that they sampled in Seattle with another sample from Wuhan, and they can back into, okay, this virus has been circulating this far because it's diverged this much from, you know, from these other samples that we have. So they can do this kind of high tech stuff to estimate that it's probably been circulating in Seattle for weeks. And I think this is going to be the case in a lot of major cities. Houston, we just had some cases pop up here in Texas. Like pretty much anywhere you go, we're going to find that it's been there for a couple of weeks and that there's already a fairly widespread outbreak. So then it becomes a matter of these things are, so two things in terms of the kind of tornado making landfall. This is going to grow whether we test for it or not. And then right now at the end of this week, we're ramping up testing capacity. So we're supposed to be moving to some, I want to say it's like 10,000 tests a week or something like this. I've got a lot of numbers rattling around up here right now, but we're supposed to be ramping up like a lot, you know, be able to do thousands and thousands of tests of this. And so when that happens, starting next week, when we really have those tests out there and they're functioning and they're ready to go, we're going to find all these cases everywhere. So there's going to be a big surge in the U.S. case numbers, and that's going to happen next week. Next week, assuming that we don't see more test delays, assuming that there's no shenanigans at the CDC, whatever is happening, if we can test people next week, we should see the numbers begin to really spike. That's going to have an impact on grocery store shelves. It's going to have an impact on toilet paper availability, bottled water, the basics, you know, canned food, stuff like that. So you'll start to see some of that. As for when the hospitals are going to start filling up, that, you know, dependent on how many people are sick right now, that may start happening in major cities like the next week. So we may be like, you know, roughly 2 weeks out from you see a news report where MGH is overwhelmed, or, you know, Manhattan or Chicago, some of these big cities, especially in Seattle. I think maybe next week we might start to see hospital wait times start to spike. Definitely probably the week after in Seattle. So this is coming, and it's coming because of the viral, the exponential nature of viral spread and the doubling time. And it's coming because people are going to start to get symptomatic on a lag, and they're going to want to some subset of them. And we don't really know. 20% in Wuhan needed hospitalization. They've got air pollution problems there. There may have been a different, more aggressive strain there. You know, the different geographies, different bodies, different, you know, different climate. It may be better here. It may be worse. You know, we have more obesity in the U.S. It's hard to know what that percentage of people that's going to need hospitalization is. The 10% number from Italy of needing ICU, that's a very grim number. But Italy has a lot of old people. The population there is very old. Mm-hmm. And this virus hits old people very hard. So that, you know, could be half in the U.S. Even 5% needing ICU in the U.S. at a 20% infection rate, which is on the low end of what's expected here, is bad. At a 10% infection rate, which is seasonal influenza, 5% needing ICU is just going to, we're missing a whole decimal place to be able to accommodate that.
All right. Well, listen, John, I appreciate you spending a few minutes with us today. I hope we could check in next week as well. And I'm hearing you coughing. I'm just getting over a cold myself here. And you know, it's one of those things, like you start to feel a little bad, you freak out a little bit, but the most important thing, I think, is, you know, look, be concerned, but don't panic.
Yeah, don't panic. Make some rational choices. Think about your budget. Think about what you can, how much food you can afford, how much space you have, and just plan that if this fizzles, it's not going to fizzle. But if it fizzles, you're just going to eat your way through that food as you would in the course of a month. We're not going to lose power. We're not going to lose water. You're going to have your refrigerator. You're going to have your stovetop. Emergency water is good, but you know, we'll probably still be able to get water out of the tap.
Yeah.
So just make your plans for okay, I'm buying my month's worth of food now, instead of I'm buying it, you know, as I go shopping every week, shopping every couple of days.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm praying for the fizzle, but I'm with you. I don't we haven't seen it so far. Listen, thank you again for coming on the program. Thank you for what you're doing, theprepared.com, and let's talk again very soon.
Sure, absolutely.
All right. Thank you. Thanks so much, John Stokes, joining us here in Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Now, one of the things that I want to do on Monday's program is get to a lot of your emails. I know that we normally do that on Friday. Didn't have a chance to do it today. So we will be getting to some of your emails. I want to ask you, what are you doing, if anything, to prepare for the coronavirus and the possibility of disruption in your day-to-day life? Are you stocking food supplies? Are you prepared to, you know, stay indoors and self-quarantine? Or what is it, social distance? yourself for a period of time. The email address, cam.edwards@bearingarms.com. Would love to hear from you. You can also tweet at me, at Cam Edwards on Twitter as well. I do hope that you have a good weekend. I appreciate you being a part of the program today. This, by the way, is just a head cold. I'm not worried. I was a little worried, but I'm not worried anymore. Anyway, I hope that you have a safe and healthy weekend, and we'll talk to you here with another edition of Bearing Arms Cam & Company on Monday. Don't forget, you can subscribe to Town Hall Media at YouTube. Never miss a program. Also, subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, townhall.com's podcast page, and you can become a VIP member of bearingarms.com. We certainly do thank you for your support in our Second Amendment journalism, but you also get access to exclusive commentary, analysis, and more. Again, you can do that at bearingarms.com. Have a great weekend. We'll see you soon with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company.